Hello, and welcome to Batflips and Nerds, the podcast that brings you a British take on baseball. You can find us on Twitter at batflips_nerds and on Facebook, facebook.com/batflipsandnerds. I am, as ever, your host, John McGee. And joining me today are the Thinking Ladies Rockies fan, Ben Carter, and baseball's busiest North Wales-based fantasy expert, writer for BP Wrigleyville, Banished to the Pen, and Fantasy Pros, Darius Austin. How are we, chaps?
Yeah, not bad, thanks.
Good yeah, doing very well. Thank you, John, yeah.
Good, good. Right, so as usual, we're going to start with a quick roundup of the week in baseball. It's been, I guess, relatively busy with spring training having started, but I wouldn't say that the wires have been ablaze with hot gossip. But there's one or two things. So spring training we're going to cover substantively a little later on. Elsewhere, the top lines have been, firstly, the Padres have signed the former Angels pitcher, Gerard Weaver, which makes their hot mess of a road spontaneously combust, as far as I'm concerned. I don't know if you guys had any other takes on Weaver.
I'm very interested in this.
I think you summed it up pretty nicely.
You are interested in it. How could you feasibly be interested in Gerard Weaver joining the Padres?
I think in the wider context of this potentially being the worst rotation we've ever seen, I do have there's a couple of guys in there. I think Chacín has had success in the past in Coors Field, and I kind of like Luis Perdomo only because he's a 23-year-old who went straight from high A to the majors. But I think there's the potential for this with them picking up Weaver. I think by quite a lot of metrics was the worst pitcher by some margin in baseball last year. I think there is real potential for them to be sort of the Reds bullpen of 2017 and just really set some records for pitching.
Yeah, well, it's a bit of a watch this space. I know that that Tom's already done an article on the Padres rotation, so we can link to that as well. But if anything, Weaver has made it worse, which I didn't think was going to be at all feasible. Another story about a pitcher this week, rather less of a sort of comedy aside and a bit of a shame, really, was the news that trickled through, I think it was on Friday, that the Great Britain baseball pitcher, the London-born pitcher from the Miami Marlins farm system, Chris Reed, has announced his retirement. So that means that his last appearance as a professional baseball player was in GB colours in Brooklyn back in September. So something of a poetic end, I guess, but a shame, really. Darius, you picked him out as one of your five GB players to watch for this year. And so if anything, it's proved that that's something of a curse. So the likes of John Lester and Eric Thames, I think, should be watching their back.
Yeah, I hope I haven't cursed anybody with writing about them. It kind of seemed like Reed might have a decent shot to get some major league playing time this year. What with the Marlins not really having a established lefty. I know they have some guys who are good from the right side who can neutralize left-handers, but I still thought, oh, maybe there's a shot for him here. And he did okay as a starter in the minors last year as well. Had a few pretty impressive starts for them. So I thought maybe this would be the year that we'd finally get to see him pitch more than a few innings. But sadly, he's decided to retire. I haven't yet seen if he's fully explained the decision and what he's doing next. But yeah, hopefully the other four guys from the GB team that I named won't suffer a similar fate.
Absolutely. So I think we've already kicked it off on Twitter. The campaign to get Chris Reed pitching in the GB National Baseball League, maybe for Southampton Mustangs or London Mets, starts here. And it's not going to end until we've seen him in the whites out at Farnham Park.
Yeah, that would be pretty fun to see. I think at this point, John, there's something that you need to say. You need to get out there. And I'll just go ahead and say the words Jeffrey Loria and see what it is that comes out of your mouth now.
Well, yeah. So staying down in Miami, but taking an even sourer turn, Jeffrey Loria. So there was news that came out last week that Jeffrey Loria is going to be the president of the United States, Donald Trump's appointee to be the ambassador to France. Now, I don't need to introduce anyone listening to this podcast to Jeffrey Laurier. Indeed, in our last podcast with Dave Kaufman, where we talked about the Expos, we went into some detail about some of his crimes and misdemeanors. And for those of you who need a primer, Jeff Passan's written a brilliant one about what a terrible human being Jeffrey Laurier is, a man who not only took the Montreal Expos away from their home city in order to fit his own nefarious ends, but then also embezzled, I'm going to use that word, money from the good people of Miami to build his own stadium, and is promptly going to sell his concern, the Miami Marlins, having been, let's be honest, a rentier, for just over three times what he bought it for, 10 or so years ago. Now, what is the problem with that gentleman going to be the French ambassador? Lots of people in American politics get their positions through patronage, which is fair enough. My problem with it is that he's sort of suitably unqualified. Now, if this were a grace and favour position in a small country, I would expect them to be ticked off once they read Jeff Passan's piece about Jeffrey Laurier and think that they'd maybe been snubbed. But let's be honest, this is one of the key alliances in world politics. It's France and it's the United States of America. And I, in my career, have had the dubious pleasure of having some engagement with diplomats, including with ambassadors and members of the American Embassy staff in London. And let's just say that Jeffrey Laurier, they ain't. They work with tact, they worked with skill, they work with knowledge. They're not people who think that in order to fix a rotten ball club, the right way to do that is to put your general manager on the bench, or indeed to spend $80 million on Kenley Jansen, which would be a complete vanity signing. I just wonder what his solution is going to be when there's a humanitarian crisis in the Middle East. The UN are asking people to intervene, and he's the go-between between the future president of France, whoever that may be, and the president of the United States. Is it going to be, I've got an idea, maybe we can send Andrew Kashner in as a Middle East peace envoy. I really hope it is, actually, because that would at least bring a little bit of levity to what is a completely ridiculous situation, and I think I'm going to leave it there.
Yeah, no, it's a very persuasive argument, and especially good news for anyone who had embezzlement in their Bat Flips and Nerds bingo card. That was an unexpected word for today's podcast, but on a serious note, yeah, Laurie has been a bit of a poison for the game of baseball. I don't think there's any denying that. And as you said, I can't see him doing a much better job in the world of politics. But no, I think you made the point a lot better than I could.
Yeah, I mean, I can't make it too pointedly. Like, this guy has been wretched in his chosen world. He's been awful to every city and person who's ever crossed his path, other than those who've been fortunate enough to be in his employ and be good enough to, you know, at waving a stick or throwing a ball in order to get some money out of it. But I cannot think of a less suitably qualified individual for a post in the diplomatic service than this man. He is absolutely rotten. Anyway, moving on to another topic entirely. Ben, you wrote a piece this week, which we posted up today, about Josh Donaldson and how, if anything, he's underrated. Now, as the person who's responsible for pushing this out into the ether, I must say that there's been a rather strange reaction. I think a lot of people maybe haven't read your rationale as to why Donaldson's underrated. They've just, done the classic baseball fan, old school style, said, well, he's the AL MVP. How could you possibly call him underrated? So for those who maybe are listening more than they're reading, what was your argument?
Yeah, I appreciate it's quite a tough argument to make that a player universally recognised one of the best in baseball is underrated. But it's a dead time of the season I wanted to have something to write about. And just looking at Donaldson's stats from the last few years, I realised he's been really, really good. Obviously, Mike Trout's been in kind of a league of his own for the last 4 years, but Donaldson's been in a separate league of his own, if you like, just beneath Trout, where no one really's been able to touch him outside of those two. So I kind of just wanted to point that out, because a lot of people, I think the argument's been made falsely that Trout's the best player in baseball, and anyone who claims Donaldson's even close to him, you know, doesn't understand statistics like how important defense is or how important base running is. But in truth, Donaldson's been a fantastic player across the board. It's an especially interesting, you know, development for him, given he has such a late career start. not really getting to the majors until the age of 28, not really imposing himself until that time. And then suddenly he exploded into, well, now a perennial MVP candidate. So, yeah, I just wanted to post an article looking at, you know, how good he's been and also how he's managed to do that. So I included a video in there which has Donaldson talking about his swing in very minute detail, where he talks about, you know, everything from the leg kick to the follow through. And it's really interesting stuff and accessible for people like myself who are fairly useless when it comes to understanding swings. So I was just kind of trying to shine a light on that and point out how good he really has been for the last 4 years, and that with any luck, he might be on his way to a sleeper Hall of Fame career.
How about you, Darius? Have you got any takes on Donaldson other than he's very good?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if it's it can't really be described as a hot take, but I really love Donaldson. I think he's a terrific player. I think the defensive skills in particular are the kind of things that people are prone to underrate, especially if they aren't really into defensive metrics, or we know that baseball can be quite market driven, sadly. And so I think playing in Oakland and then Toronto, even though he has been MVP, I'm not sure that Donaldson is the kind of guy who's necessarily got the recognition that he would have got had he been playing in New York, for example. So yeah, I think Ben is spot on. He's a fantastic player, and there is potentially, I think, and maybe the same can be said of Mike Trout as well, because I don't think, despite his skills, he's actually that well recognized as good a player as he is. But I certainly think that Donaldson is one of the best, probably four or five players in baseball, I would say.
And we will, of course, get to see Josh Donaldson playing live action baseball very shortly when things get underway in terms of the spring training game schedule. He'll be playing down in Florida against the Twins and the Red Sox and so on. For those of you who have missed it, for those of you who've been sleeping under a rock, apparently baseball season has actually started. Apparently some men jogging up and down on a green field and playing long toss constitutes baseball season, according to a lot of crazy people. Yes, it's spring training. It started. Pitchers and catchers have reported. And I have started my annual campaign that this is not real baseball. Can we all just go to sleep for another fortnight, at least until the friendly start? So the question that I'm going to put to both of you guys is whether there are any redeeming features to spring training whatsoever. How about you, Darius?
I think in sort of an actual watching baseball sense, consuming the content, it's fairly irrelevant for me, certainly as a fantasy player and somebody who does like to track the news. I think it's mostly, are guys healthy? Maybe is somebody working on something new? Are they changing the delivery, adding a pitch? Those kind of things can be moderately interesting to me, and maybe they can reveal something. And every now and again, of course, you get the sad things like Alex Reyes, who obviously wasn't healthy, and we've only found out about it now because spring training started and he still wasn't ready to throw, and now he's going to miss the year. So that probably is a point against spring training, I suppose. But yeah, on the whole, I think it's all fairly a whole bit of nothing, and we'll have to wait a few more weeks for anything really to happen.
What about you, Ben? Do you have a contrary opinion, or are we all going to be in agreement here and just letting Tom have this rant on his own next time he's here?
I'd love to be able to argue with you guys and provide a scorching hot take on why spring training is better than the real games themselves, but unfortunately I can't do so. I'm kind of in agreement with you guys. It's nice to have baseball back and be able to watch it. It's been a long winter, but the games are really meaningless and they go on far too long in my opinion. So yeah, I'm not going to really get into it for another month or so, but hey, at least, you know, there's some activity out there from the teams and we can watch cool gifs of pitchers throwing really hard again. You know, there's some redeeming qualities.
Well, yeah, I think we all enjoy cool gifs of pitchers throwing really hard. But as someone who spent some of this afternoon watching YouTube videos of pitchers throwing really hard in order to prep for an interview that I have later on this evening, let me tell you, there's a tolerance for that, and it's about 30 seconds. Anyway, I do have a redeeming thing about spring training this year. It's not a complete lost cause, because the Seattle Mariners have some of the best caps that I've ever seen. So make sure, if you haven't feasted your eyes on those, that you do. They've got a lovely trident on them. Right, so Trident caps to one side and back onto the real business. I guess the season is kicking off in earnest. There is going to be some baseball played very shortly, and that begs the question, what's going to happen? We've trailed this a little bit on the Twitter feed, and we've been in touch with some of you who I know are regular listeners, but we are this year. We didn't get going until mid-season, but this year we're going to have some pre-season previews. What we're trying to do is find a fan of as many MLB clubs as we can who are representatives from the UK perspective, so we're going to take a sample of the requisite fan clubs of each of the MLB clubs and ask them a few questions about what's going to happen this year and look at some things from a bit of a UK point of view as well. Tom's actually leading the charge on those, which is why he's not with us this evening. The very first one out of the blocks is the Philadelphia Phillies. So for my money, that's going to be the only pennant that the Philadelphia Phillies win this year, but at least they've got something. So more on that soon, more on the Twitter feed. There'll be a couple of those, I guess, coming out in the next fortnight, and they'll be coming at you thick and fast, so we hope you enjoy them. But for us, we are not just going to leave it there. We are going to do our own preseason preview of sorts, if you will. We've got a few questions that we're going to chew over about what we think is going to happen over the course of the year. The first of which is to look at teams where we think there's going to be an interesting storyline or that we'll keep an eye on, which maybe aren't our own teams, which for those of you who've missed, I'm a Red Sox fan, Darius is a Giants fan, and Ben is a Rockies fan. So other than our own team, which teams are we going to watch? So we'll start with you, Darius. Where's the interesting storyline in MLB this year?
I think I'm going to look at the Brewers, actually. You mentioned that I've been looking at Eric Thames earlier. I always really struggle not to call him Eric Thames as well, which is a problem for me because I keep talking about him. But I think him coming over from the KBO after 3 years of just dominating the league is really interesting. And I'm really looking forward to see whether that actually translates or not, because he could be a huge player for them if he does. I think they've got some really exciting players like Keon Broxton, Domingo Santana in the outfield. They've got Jonathan Villar, who obviously runs a lot. They stole, I think, either the most or the second most bases in the majors last year. So I think there's a lot of exciting parts on this team. I'm kind of really interested to see. I think they've done a really good job with their rebuild as well. So there's a lot of prospects on the way, and I think a few of those will be up later this year. And they've got plenty more young stars already on the roster, like Orlando Arcia. So I think the Brewers are an interesting team for me to watch, who I don't think are going to be in it. But I think there's a lot of players there that I'm keen to see how they pan out.
I think that's a good one. I think that was on my shortlist as well. I don't know about you, Ben. Who's yours?
I'm personally going to go with the Houston Astros, who are going to be hopefully a little more competitive than the Brewers. So I'm interested to see what goes on in the AL West this year. The Astros looked really good for most of last year, kind of petered out towards the end of the season and didn't do well in the postseason. But they have some really exciting young players in that team. And I think all winter long, everyone's been saying that, you know, kind of a pitcher or a strong starting pitcher short of being a really strong contender. So I'm interested to see how they cope. You know, will Dallas Keuchel have a bounce back year? Will Correa and Altuve form the best up the middle partnership in baseball? And then if they are in contention, what moves will they make at the deadline to get that starting pitcher that we all think they need? So I think that'll be a very interesting team to watch, especially in that division, because I think the Rangers will be competitive, and I think if things break right, the Angels might be competitive. I know they're tabbed for over 85 wins by a couple of projection systems, which is optimistic in my opinion, but it should be an interesting year in that division. Obviously, the Mariners are bound to come agonisingly close to the playoffs and fall short again. So, I think the Astros and the AL West in general are going to be interesting to watch this year.
Which I think is convenient, because I did toy with talking about your Rockies, Ben, but I thought I'd probably be a little bit over-clubbed against you. Nevertheless, I think they're well worth keeping an eye out with that promising young rotation and whatever the hell's going on with Ian Desmond at first base. We all want to watch it and find out. But I didn't pick the Rockies. The team I did pick were one that you just mentioned, the Seattle Mariners. My reasoning being that, as you said, they do come agonizingly close every year to making the playoffs. I think this year may be no different, but it's going to be a closer run thing. Clearly, the man of the moment, Jerry DePoto, has made a hell of a lot of moves over the course of the winter. The question is whether they've made them better. They've picked up some nice players. Gene Segura is a very good player at second base. Jared Dyson will be a huge upgrade in the outfield for them, but maybe might not hit quite as well as the guys he's replacing. I think the big question mark for the Mariners will be what happens in their rotation, where there's been some really strange moves, but they brought in Drew Smyly and Yovani Gallardo, who I guess will eat innings if nothing else. Smyly is a bit more upside than that. It's going to be a very different Mariners team, and for those of us who have the stamina to stay up through the evening, I think they could be a really fun team to watch, actually. Whether they'll make the playoffs in what, as you rightly point out, Ben, is going to be a tough division, remains to be seen, but they're going to be intriguing anyway, and we all know that DePoto is going to be active around the trade deadline, so if nothing else, we can watch out for that. Just to point out that although Tom's not here, he has answered these questions, and these are Tom's questions. When we were thinking about things this afternoon, he kind of rode to our rescue. He picked the Phillies. I'm sure he'll go into that with his guests later on this evening, but I think I share his intrigue about the Phillies. Are they going to be something or are they going to be nothing? How about you guys? Did you have any thoughts on the Phillies? How about you, Darius?
Yeah, I think they're a pretty interesting team. I really like Aaron Nola. I think he started off great last year and then he got hurt and it kind of made his numbers look terrible, but he's got some really nice skills. I think he's drawn some impressive comps I think if he can be healthy this year, then he's a player I'm really watching. And I think there's generally speaking, there's a lot of, again, young talent coming up there who probably will be in the majors this year. Guys like Odubel Herrera, who kind of impressed surprisingly last year, I think is a nice little player as well. So, yeah, I think things are looking up quite a lot from the Phillies of 2 or 3 years ago and the Ruben Amaro doom and gloom, certainly.
Excellent. So with the Phillies optimistically trending upwards, how about some of those guys whose careers may be trending downwards, but who we all hope and pray will be contributors on their teams this year? We're going to pick out one each, a veteran who we will watch this year closely and why we'll do that. So for me, I guess you could argue that this guy's not a veteran, but I've picked Justin Turner. The reason being that he played very, very well last year. He was the glue that bound together a listing and falling apart Dodgers side when their rotation was smashed to smithereens and they were to-ing and fro-ing with various position players. He, along with Corey Seager, were the guys who were really the glue in the middle of that order. And he had something of a breakout season, really. He's been a pretty decent player for some time, but not quite performing at the level that he was last year. He got paid, obviously, a handsome amount of money, and he really earned it. I'm really intrigued to see if Turner can maintain the level that he was at last year. Not quite Josh Donaldson level, but not far behind in terms of bopping third baseman, because I think if he does, that's really good news for the Dodgers, and if he doesn't, they're not going to struggle, but it will be a huge knock on them. So yeah, Justin Turner for me. So what about you, Ben?
The guy I'm going to go for is, again, maybe not technically a veteran, but I think he probably does count as one now. It's going to be Andrew McCutchen of the Pirates, who kind of had a terrible season last year. I mean, not terrible, but for his standards, he'd been such a good player for so long, and he sort of fell off the cliff. And I think the reports are suggesting he's going to be moving out to left field this year. Obviously, the Pirates have an outstanding group of outfielders out there with Marte and Polanco too. It'll be interesting to see if he can bounce back this year in an outfield corner, because for so long he was an absolute lock for 300 average, 400 on base, 20, 25 home runs, and last year it all sort of fell apart for him at the plate. So assuming there's nothing wrong with him physically, I don't see why he can't have a bounce back year. But as I mentioned, he's getting older now. He's 30 years old, so this could be a big year for him and for the Pirates in general as well.
And Darius, what about you?
So I'm going to go with Justin Verlander.
Just keep talking, I can fix the gaps.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, he's somebody, I think he was sort of almost going on the Tim Lincecum trajectory from being this ace to suddenly it looked like he was dropping off the huge cliff. And then last year, he somehow brought his velocity back up. I think he recaptured a lot of his old form, and he found some new ways to succeed that he hadn't in the past. And I think he's a really interesting guy for the Tigers if they want to keep their window open and compete against Cleveland. I think him being at the kind of form he showed last year, where he was obviously a leading Cy Young contender, that will be really crucial for them keeping up a challenge. And if he is dropping off, then I think they've obviously got a lot of money on the books and not very many ways to move it. So I think he's going to be a real key figure in that division for this season.
Excellent. Yeah, I think those are both good picks. And Tom predictably picked Bartolo Colon because you can't keep a joke for too long, can you? I think his rationale was that Bartolo was a change of scenery candidate, and it'd be interesting to see what would happen. And at the other end of the tree, how about a rookie or a prospect to watch? Ben, who's yours?
I'm afraid I'm going to go with my own team on this one, and I'm going to say David Dahl, the centre fielder for Colorado, who quietly had a nice audition at the end of last season, where he hit pretty well in limited playing time. And I think most prospect experts think he is a centre fielder of the future in Colorado. But as you mentioned earlier, Colorado have a strange situation in their outfield. A bit of a logjam as it is, and adding Ian Desmond presumably means they plan to play him at least sometimes in the outfield. So if Dahl does hit well, he's going to kind of force his way into playing time and make it hard for the manager, what's his name, Bud Black, sorry, to keep everyone in the lineup and keep everyone happy. So it might force a trade for someone like Charlie Blackman or Carlos Gonzalez. You know, as a Rockies fan, obviously I'm excited to see what he can do, if he can be one of our key players going forward. So without wanting to toot my own team's horn too much, I'm going to pick David Dahl.
And Darius, how about you?
Yeah, Dahl was definitely on my shortlist. He's somebody that I'm really interested to see play. And as from a fantasy perspective, I think he could be a monster there as well. But I'm going to go up with someone. Hopefully I'm not stealing your choice here, John. And I'm going to pick Andrew Benintendi, who I think was just really impressive when he came up last year. I was very excited to bat him as a prospect. I thought he was a really polished guy who could succeed straight away, and he certainly didn't disappoint on that front. So I think with the Red Sox needing to replace David Ortiz's production and Benintendi potentially batting second, I think whether he succeeds again, if he can carry on his form from last year, is going to be a big part of whether the Red Sox just don't miss a beat in being that league leading offense, or if they do drop off a bit. So I'm really looking forward to seeing him play. He's got a lovely swing, and I'm sure you're very excited about him as well.
Yeah, very much so. He looks a real gem of a player, and I'm not just not just talking about his awesome hair, which has great flow, as we all have worked out already. I was gonna go for another hunk, so it's okay. Benintendi was on my shortlist, but as I mentioned a little bit earlier on, we're not ones for letting a joke die when it should. So my prospect to watch this season will be Tim Tebow of the New York. prizes for those of you who guessed that one. And lastly, on our preview section, we were asked by one of our listeners, Gav Le Rose Beef, to pick a fantasy sleeper. So Darius, I'm going to give you the honors here. You're the roto king.
I am kind of beating this one into the ground so far this off season, and hopefully I'm not going to curse him as well. But Robbie Ray is my guy. He struck out over 200 last season, and you might have missed it because he had a pretty terrible ERA and the Diamondbacks were not very good. But I think he's got the stuff to succeed for fantasy players. I think there's a lot of upside there if he can just figure out maybe some sequencing issues and develop a third pitch. I think there's a real high class upper end pitcher there. So yeah, Robbie Ray, Arizona Diamondbacks, is definitely my guy, and at the moment I think you can pick him up relatively late in drafts considering how many strikeouts he can get you.
I think that's a good one. I'll certainly be writing that down on my non-existent list of things to do in fantasy baseball. Ben, how about you?
This is a kind of strange coincidence, actually. Didn't think we'd be saying this, but I'm talking about the Diamondbacks too, because I'm going to talk about Jake Lamb, their third baseman, who had kind of a strange season last year. His overall stats were really good, but it was all fueled by his monster first half of the season. where he hit 20 home runs and batted, I think, near 300 and was basically one of the best third basemen in baseball. And then, as is the way, he fell off a cliff and was kind of terrible second half. Struck out a lot, couldn't tap into that power. Now, I think it's been linked to an injury, or at least that's kind of what I'm hoping, because I think his swing did have some problems with it in that second half that he wasn't able to fix. But I'm so enticed by what he did show in that first half that I'm hoping he's going to put it all together this year. And I'm assuming the Diamondbacks, as Darius mentioned, they're not a particularly great team at the moment, so they should be giving him as many at-bats as he can get, and I don't see why he can't prove he's a pretty versatile asset on that diamond alongside Paul Goldschmidt. So, yeah, strangely enough, buy into the Arizona Diamondbacks.
Cool. Well, I'm not going to go with the Arizona Diamondbacks, which is a good thing, because that would just be too much time for this podcast taken up discussing them and not discussing their uniforms and whether they're good or bad. They're good. I am going to go with my own team, the Boston Red Sox, and I am going to controversially, and this really is a hot take, say that my fantasy sleeper is Pablo Sandoval. Now, you're not going to avoid seeing him, particularly over the next few weeks. His weight is going to be discussed far more than it really needs to be. My reasoning for picking Pablo Sandoval as a fantasy sleeper is that he is going to have to play. The options that the Red Sox have to fill in at third base are Brock Holt or Josh Rutledge, neither of whom has the ceiling that Sandoval has. Remember, not too long ago, that Sandoval was a very productive hitter, a very decent, not quite plus, but decent defender. He's going to get a lot of playing time this season, and if he gets anywhere back to where he can and should be performing, then I think he will be a bit of a good pick, because no one's going to pick him early because everyone thinks that he's a busted flush. And just in case he isn't, you can be the one to say, "I told you so." So there you go. That's it. Pablo Sandoval, come at me.
Are you at all concerned that given Sandoval's size, he might actually take up two roster spots for the Red Sox this year? Is that going to be an issue?
Oh, hey, there he is.
Pablo, if you're listening, I didn't mean it.
Well, there's plenty of space on the bench with Ortiz retiring, so maybe you can take up that spot. Right. That seems like an opportune time to call it a day, I think, guys. Those were all the questions that we had. It would be interesting to hear from those listening at home. Let us know on Twitter. Who are your fantasy sleepers? Who are your rookies and prospects to watch? Who are your veterans to watch? And which teams are you intrigued by other than your own? You can do that on Twitter. It's twitter.com/batflips_nerds. We passed over 500 followers this week. Thanks to everyone who's checking us out on there and listening to the podcast. Or you can join the conversation on Facebook, where we are facebook.com/batflipsandnerds. And on Facebook, we have over 150 people following us now. Again, if you're one of them, thank you very much. The other thing that we would like you to do, if you could, is subscribe to the podcast either on iTunes, on Stitcher, or on the TuneIn Radio app. We're on all of those things. That's the easiest way to get hold of all of the content that's going to be coming your way in the next few weeks. And I must say, there's going to be plenty. Our next episode will be an interview with the Great Britain catcher, formerly of the Cincinnati Reds, Chris Bassett. He runs his own academy down in Virginia and has some really interesting things to talk about when it comes to catching. So that should be really cool. Make sure you catch up on that one. We've also got a lot more. I mentioned the season previews coming up, so Tom's going to be taking hold of those and leading the charge. But we're also going to be doing, alongside those, some season previews for the National Baseball League, starting off with the Southampton Mustangs and the London Mets. So a lot of content coming your way, lots to look out for and lots to listen to. And hopefully we'll make it worth your while to stick your headphones in on your commute and stickers on your iPods. Before we go, we'll just let you know where you can find us as well. Where are you on Twitter, Darius?
You can find me on Twitter at DariusA64. And yeah, I'm writing at loads of different places at the moment, so that's the best way to find anything I'm putting out.
And you, Ben, where are you?
You can find me at UK Baseball Blog, where I tweeted out the Josh Donaldson article, so feel free to read that and call me an idiot.
Yeah, do call Ben an idiot. Definitely do that. And I am at Epuvontail Which I will not spell for you, but I'm sure you can find it if you can find the Batflips and Nerds Twitter. So that's all we've got time for this week. We'll join you again soon when we'll be hearing from Chris Bissett.